This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Joanna Finley? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the incident, then offer my analysis. Joanna Joyce Finley was born in 1970 in Scotland. When she was young, she was described as wild and an enthusiastic consumer of alcohol products. She went to a local college and entered an exchange program, which sent her to the University of Nebraska in the United States. In 1995, 25-year-old Joanna met a 40-year-old college instructor named Gary Allen Trogdon. They became romantically involved. Gary had retired from the Air Force, where he served as a navigator on a Boeing B-52 Stratofortress. This is a long-range subsonic heavy bomber. He was a lieutenant colonel when he retired. When Joanna met Gary, he had already earned two master's degrees and was working toward a PhD in history. Gary found Joanna to be physically attractive and energetic. She brought him back to his younger years. It's not clear what Joanna saw in Gary, although it has been suggested that she was attracted to his financial stability and maturity. The couple's romance moved quickly. They became engaged in 1996 and married that same year. They remained in Nebraska as Gary continued working on his PhD. During this time, Joanna earned a master's degree in English literature and creative writing. In the year 2000, she started working on a doctorate in modern Scottish literature and the post-colonial novels of Africa, India, and Britain. In 2004, after Gary completed his PhD, he and Joanna moved to a residence near Baltimore, Maryland. Gary had been offered a job in that area as a military historian for the Department of the Army. He also worked as an online instructor for a college in West Virginia. Joanna taught writing and literature at the University of Maryland as she continued to work on her PhD. In 2008, she discontinued the pursuit of the degree. Therefore, she never earned her doctorate. In some college, somewhere, there's a group of students yearning for an instructor to be hired so they can learn about Scottish post-colonial literature. It looks like their wish may never be granted. Joanna focused her time on volunteering at several animal rescue organizations. She became fascinated with keeping pets in her residence. Eventually, she had amassed such a collection of cats, dogs, and other animals that she and Gary moved to a rural house with 5 acres of land to accommodate the creatures. They lived on Little Cliffs Road in Hollywood, Maryland. This is a small community in St. Mary's County, about an hour and 40 minutes south of Baltimore. In addition to the commitment of having many animals, Joanna and Gary were highly interested in firearms. They had 10 guns in their house. Joanna's students would later say that she was witty, engaging, and had a passion for firearms. She frequently would go on tangents about guns in class. Joanna and Gary were not proficient at managing money, and having a large quantity of animals on their property did not help their financial situation. Eventually, they had over 50 cats and were spending about $600 a month on gourmet cat food alone. This doesn't include veterinary bills and other expenses associated with maintaining a catastrophic quantity of felines. The couple was tens of thousands of dollars in debt. In addition to this stressor, Joanna was suffering from symptoms of depression and was misusing her antidepressant medication. Some people who were acquainted with Gary would later say that Joanna's behavior became bizarre, threatening, and aggressive. Joanna wasn't the only one engaging in destructive behavior. Gary was facing what appeared to be an addiction. He had over 3,000 inappropriate images of minors on his computer. Joanna discovered this and was extremely angry with Gary. He agreed to seek mental health counseling if Joanna would not report him to the police. Now moving to the timeline of the incident. On October 30, 2010, Gary Trogdon attended a support group related to his problem with collecting illegal images. At another point in the day, he and Joanna helped a neighbor build a chicken coop. In the evening, they went to a Mexican restaurant in the town of California, Maryland, which is about 10 minutes away from their house in Hollywood. There was no indication that Joanna and Gary were having any type of disagreement that day. They appeared to be getting along. This would drastically change before the day ended. At 10:49 p.m., Joanna called 911 and told the operator that her husband had assaulted her. She said that he had a gun and was chasing her around their house. Joanna also indicated that she had fired a shot at Gary using a gun of her own. The call disconnected, and the 911 center called Joanna back. Gary answered the phone and explained that his wife had taken several pills, but she was okay. He claimed that he was the victim in the dispute and mentioned how Joanna shot at him with a .22 caliber pistol. Despite being told to stay on the phone with the operator, Gary said he needed to go look for other guns in order to secure them. He wanted to keep them away from Joanna. When he came back on the line, Gary indicated that he thought Joanna did not have any other weapons. At this moment, the call disconnected. When the police arrived at the couple's house on Little Cliffs Road, they found 55-year-old Gary Trogdon in his recliner. He had sustained one gunshot wound to the chest. The bullet had struck his heart and killed him. The weapon used to kill Gary was a .357 Magnum revolver, which was 5 feet away from him on the floor. The police also recovered a .22 caliber semi-automatic pistol. Joanna was taken to the hospital because she had consumed several Zoloft pills. She didn't really say much to the police, although she did ask if her pets were okay. The next day, Joanna Finley was arrested for first-degree murder. Her defense attorney indicated that Joanna did not shoot Gary. Rather, he turned the .357 Magnum revolver on himself. The case went to trial in 2011. Joanna testified on her own behalf. Here's what she stated. Joanna found the inappropriate images on Gary's computer a few months before his death. He went to counseling and promised to discontinue his bad behavior. On October 30, 2010, Joanna found more images on his computer. She was disgusted and furious with Gary. An argument broke out between the couple. Gary physically attacked Joanna in this process. In an effort to defend herself, she punched him in the face and retrieved a .22 caliber pistol from a drawer in the coffee table in the living room. She pointed the pistol at the floor and fired one time. When Gary backed away, Joanna called 911. At this point, Gary retrieved a .357 Magnum revolver and brought it into the room. He took the .22 caliber revolver away from Joanna. Gary talked to the 911 operator in an effort to prevent the police from being sent to his house, but then realized there was nothing he could do to stop them. They were going to arrive and discover what he had been hiding. Gary fired the fatal shot from his revolver.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Paul Brandis, introducing my podcast, Countdown to Dallas. It's a fascinating, in-depth look at the seemingly unconnected events that led to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's based on my book of the same title. In that book and in this podcast, I go all the way back to 1939, when Lee Harvey Oswald was born into a troubled and dysfunctional family. I'll follow his transient and often violent teenage years and young adulthood, painting a fuller picture of the man who would later become Kennedy's killer. I also take a look at events unfolding in that era, like Cuba and Vietnam, and I'll unpack the conspiracy theories too, not one of which has ever been conclusively proven. Subscribe to Countdown to Dallas at evergreenpodcasts.com or your favorite listening app, October 31st.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
Joanna's testimony was very persuasive. The jury found her not guilty of first-degree murder, but they were not convinced that she was blameless. They found her guilty of attempted murder and of using a handgun in the commission of a felony. Joanna was facing 30 years for the attempted murder charge and 20 years for the firearm charge. The judge did not appear to be convinced of Joanna's guilt. In February of 2012, he gave her just 5 years for the attempted murder and suspended the sentence. Joanna was also sentenced to 5 years for the firearm charge. This sentence was mandatory and could not be suspended. 10 months into her prison sentence, the state dropped the firearm charge and deported Joanna to Scotland. It sounds like Joanna was making progress with an appeal, and the state's attorney was not interested in retrying the case. Now moving to my analysis. Joanna Findlay maintains her innocence, and ultimately she was released from prison very early, as if the state did not have a strong case. The state argued that Joanna attempted to kill Gary, but her aim was off. This brings me to the question, was Joanna Findlay guilty of murder or of any crime in this case? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that she was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Joanna admitted to punching Gary in the nose and firing the .22 caliber pistol into the floor of the house. Gary told the 911 operator that he was the victim. There were indications that Gary was trying to keep Joanna safe. For example, when the police found the .22 caliber pistol that Joanna had fired, the magazine was partially out, as if someone had tried to render the weapon inoperable. In addition, investigators found medication belonging to Joanna in Gary's pocket. The .357 Magnum revolver that was used to kill Gary was found 5 feet away from his body. If he pulled the trigger, how did the gun get that far away? Also, discharging a firearm into one's heart is an uncommon tactic in the realm of self-inflicted gunshot wounds. Moving to the exculpatory factors, if Gary had been caught possessing inappropriate images, his career definitely would have been over, and he may have gone to prison. He was going to lose everything. For example, there would be no more gourmet cat food. Gary was calmly talking to the 911 operator and specifically mentioned how Joanna was okay, almost as if he was trying to convince the police not to visit his house. Like, whatever was happening there was no big deal. This is consistent with the theory that Gary was worried about being arrested for having those images. Gary was found seated in a recliner, and the discharge of the .357 Magnum revolver left a contact wound on his chest, indicating it was pressed up against his chest when the trigger was pulled. If there was really a struggle between the couple, why was Gary seated, and how did Joanna get close enough to fire at point-blank range? One would think that Gary would have reached out and attempted to grab the weapon from Joanna, just like he grabbed the .22 caliber pistol from her. As far as the revolver being 5 feet away from Gary's body, there are a few explanations that do not involve murder. Perhaps Joanna moved the revolver during all the chaos. Maybe first responders kicked it by accident when attending to Gary. It's also possible that Gary used his last moment alive to throw or kick the pistol 5 feet away, like he discharged it and immediately threw it or kicked it away before dying. This is unlikely considering the drastic effect the bullet would have had, but it is technically possible. Joanna admitted to firing the .22 caliber pistol, but she had a case for self-defense, and the bullet went into the floor. She was familiar with the operation of firearms. She talked to her students about them all the time. If she was really trying to kill Gary, why didn't she simply point the gun at him and shoot? Furthermore, if Joanna was trying to commit murder, why did she call 911 prior to Gary being shot. Having the police at the scene would not improve her chances of murdering Gary. Joanna was the one trying to get law enforcement to her house. Gary was the one who didn't want them to stop by. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I think that Joanna Finley was guilty of murder or of any other crime? In my opinion, she was not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of any crime in this case. I believe that Joanna was telling the truth. Gary fired the fatal shot. Joanna was acting erratically and was extremely distressed, but was not trying to murder anyone. She was facing the end of her marriage because of Gary's bad behavior. Gary was facing the end of everything that he knew. I think what happened in this case is that the state pursued the charges because Joanna was an imperfect victim. She maintained a property with over 50 cats, almost like the crazy cat lady character featured in the TV series The Simpsons. Joanna appeared to have some mental health difficulties, specifically symptoms of depression, and she had made some adults-only videos with another woman, which led the state to call her character into question. In reality, Joanna's excessive collection of cats, depressed mood, and sexual behavior were irrelevant to this case. Now moving to my final thoughts. The case of Joanna Finley can be summarized in this way. Far from the frigid fells of her Scottish homeland, a fiery and fearless Finley forged fondness with a foreign faculty in the faraway states. Their fellowship flourished into fetching further degrees and finding a foothold in the fertile fields of Maryland, where their fortune faltered from a financial fiasco fueled by a flurry of 50 felines. In a fierce fracas, the fellow fatally faced a firearm's fury. Following a flawed verdict, Finley used fortitude and finesse, and finally found freedom.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
I'm an American vigilante. I have a question for you. What would you do if someone you cared about was abducted, taken from you? Would you call me? Would you care about how I got them back? Download American Vigilante now.